And our special guest tonight, Erin Brockovich. And we're going to be back with Erin and talk about her work, Hot Water, Rock Bottom, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Erin. What got you to write about fiction? What inspired you to do that?
Well, you know, being just after the film had come out and seeing over the course of the past 10 years, information still not coming out, or I don't know if people were really, sometimes it takes a good book or a good film to kind of wake you up and you think, wow, maybe that's happening in my own backyard. And I feel and saw the frustration of people with all their environmental problems. So we thought if we could tell a story that had truth behind it, but in a fictional way that was entertaining, might be a better way to grab someone's attention or want to get them involved or create more awareness. And they just, another avenue for entertainment. And sometimes we need to do that. As I said earlier, boy, it's a rough world out there. And
sure is.
Sometimes if we can, come home and watch a good movie in our own safety and turn the TV off or close the book and go, gosh, if that's happening, I'd like to see what I could do to help. And part of that, I think part of saving America and bringing America back is America's got to come home. We got to come home to dealing with our environmental problems and our infrastructure issues and bring it home. And so when people can come home and in that safety read or watch something and learn from it and become more proactive, that's why we wanted to do the novels.
Let's talk about Rock Bottom and then, of course, the evolution, Hot Water. What's the premise?
Well, Rock Bottom is around mountaintop removal, which we clearly, and I have many communities reporting where they've got mining companies come in and they are destroying the environment, destroying the trees. They're contaminating the groundwater. And so the first book, Rock Bottom, is about the character AJ, and she has hit rock bottom plenty of times in her life. And that one was about mountaintop removal. And we had the first two were in a series. And this next one is about nuclear and the potential. There's still a lot of secrecy around nuclear facilities. And there are communities that report, what appears to them to be too many children with, thyroid cancer or illness. I mean, in and around nuclear facilities. I have one very, very, very close to my house here. It's called Rocketdyne in Simi Valley, California. And they actually had a meltdown in 1958, I believe. And I am astounded at the number of young youth in their 20s coming down with rare, rare cancers. I just don't think it's normal. Again, I make this comparison. I don't know how old you are, but really, I'm 51 now. And
I'm older than you, Erin.
Well, do you ever remember growing up that, again, you would hear of 15 kids at your school with cancer?
Never.
Never. But yet it's almost becoming somewhat commonplace. And so nuclear is an issue that has struck a chord with a lot of people, and that is what we chose for the second book. That's how we got to Hot Water. So we had two series to get out the first year, and they're both out.
Is the AJ character the same in both books?
She is, and I hope she's a character that people will learn to love. The books have been optioned for a television series.
Oh,
now, once they're optioned, you got to go out there and get it sold. So we're working on that, and there's definitely been interest. But I'm hoping it's a character that catches on and people can relate to. And AJ she's far from perfect, and she's gotten awful cynical. I do love that about her, and, she can get away with some things that I don't think any of us would really place in that position. Have you ever had that moment where you're listening to some rhetoric and you just would like to pop somebody upside the head? You'd never do it, but AJ kind of gets away with that, and you're like, yeah. So
is AJ you?
She has some similarities to me, but she's not supposed to be me. She's her own person. But, she's her own person, but in a way, she's all of us. Because I just don't think there's any one person that doesn't face an obstacle in life, whether it's a child with a disable or a disability, or you yourself don't think because you have a science degree, therefore you have no business talking about it or paying attention to what's going on to your community. And AJ's experienced all that, problems with her in-laws, the death of her husband, and they've gotten divorced, and this child who has a disability. I mean, she has to deal with everyday life and overcome these obstacles, but at the same time is willing to get involved to try to help somebody else's life be better.
Erin, you get involved in going after some heavy hitter companies. They're very wealthy. They've got a lot of staying power. Have you ever been threatened in the course of any of this by them physically?
No. You know, Ed and I used to talk about that way back then. He said, if you turned up dead, Erin, we'll know who did it. Like, oh, well, yeah. That makes me feel a lot better, Edward. No, they tend to stay away from me. Now, I find things interesting when we're in court, and I'm not the attorney. And listen, I need the help sometimes of the law with us on this. Clearly we do, but when the system is so bogged down, it's taking 15 years, we're going to have to find another way to get this job done. But I don't feel threatened, but what I find interesting is every single time there's a trial, one of the first things they'll ask is, or request, or want to be in front of the jury, is they can't mention Erin Brockovich.
They can't mention you?
Nope. And they've done jury pools where they've asked jurors, if Erin Brockovich was involved in this, would it change your opinion? And people say, yeah, it will. So they oftentimes will request that you can't talk about Erin Brockovich, you can't talk about Erin Brockovich, the film. And I always find that interesting. Other than that, no, I have never had any kind of threat or any kind of communication with any of the companies, certainly in the communities I'm dealing with. I do know that we're involved in a situation in Duncan, Oklahoma right now, and I had a community meeting, and it's Halliburton, and they had contaminated many people's wells with high levels of perchlorate.
Oh, geez.
They showed up at the meeting, and right now they are out there going to people's homes and offering to buy them. And I thought, okay, this is a good first step. But during that community meeting, not once did they speak to me or approach me.
Nothing.
No.
Was there any remorse there?
I couldn't really tell. They were there with their attorneys. And, you know, as soon as the meeting was over, they seemed to want to get out pretty fast. But they want to distance themselves, but they are also out there approaching homeowners, and they're going to have to buy their property or replace their well. But see, you know, you've contaminated the whole property, and these are high levels of perchlorate, some of the highest that we've ever seen. It's like 39,000 parts per billion in some people's wells.
Gosh.
And what just kills me is a lot of times, see, these chemicals, they don't have any particular smell. Now, chromium-6 in water has a color. But these people think it's their well water, it's minerals. They don't stop to think, oh, gee, this is hexavalent chromium, let's call Erin Brockovich. And these people in Duncan, Oklahoma, you know, once these contaminations show themselves, it's not like they just got there yesterday. They've usually been there for a while. And somebody, somewhere, every single time, I guarantee it, knows it.
You know, you would think some of these companies, when they go into town hall meetings, would show remorse, you know, would act as if they don't know what's going on and that they're finding out about this for the first time, too. It sure would help their cause if they did that.
It would. And what would help their cause tremendously would be, you know, some truth. I mean, that is the number one cause and root cause of our problems. Deception.
Yes. From the top on down, I'm sure, isn't it?
Pardon me?
From the top on down, because it must reach the CEO level.
Well, I would think if it didn't, it should. You know, I think about this. If I was the CEO of a company, you know, if you don't make it your business to know what's going on in your company, then you got no business running a $70 billion company.
No, not at all.
And so... If they know, it's pretty hard to find out if they know, but there's a paper trail, and you can start making that connection that the company knew. And there's just no way. There's no way that somebody like Halliburton didn't know, and you'll find some old records. Oh, they did know. A lot of times the employees will come forward and tell you, yeah, they knew. I knew, and I was dumping these barrels over here. I mean, they can be very, very instrumental. They'll come to us in form of a whistleblower. But more often than not, they do know.
Is it easy in this day with emails and everything else to track these things within a company?
It can be. You know, a lot of times the information, and people aren't aware, you know, under freedom of information, you can go to your water boards. You can go to, you know, in the state of California, we have like the Department of Toxic Substance and Control, and we have our local water boards. Each state does. They're named different. But you can go there and under freedom of information request to see records on the groundwater, on the company, and what might be happening in your neighborhood. And we just don't know to do that. And if we do do it, we don't always know what to look for. But more often than not, there's information sitting right there in the agencies. And yeah, with the internet the way it is today, you can get online and start finding little like suppressed news articles or something in the little local newspaper, or get online where somebody's already identified or some scientist or geologist is working on it, and you can start finding out information.
Aaron, what drives you? What pushes you? You don't stop.
You know, I just, I've always cared for the environment. It has a lot to do with my upbringing, and my dad just taught me. I mean, the greatest gifts we have is our family and our health and our right to clean water and clean air and good land. And without it, we've got nothing. None of us are anything. Imagine if we have no water. We're done.
We're gone.
We're gone. And it's such a common denominator. And we got one shot here on this planet, and we've come so far, and we're supposed to be so technically advanced, and yet we're not doing things to make life better for any of us if we destroy our health. And so for me, it's just a fight worth having, and it shouldn't have to be a fight. So it's a cause and a passion worth pursuing till I die in the hopes that, I don't know, maybe my great-grandbabies would have a better opportunity for clean water. And we really are going to have some water issues coming very, very, very soon. I think all of us have read in the paper about the depletion of wells in Texas and Oklahoma, and we are misusing our water, and much of our water is contaminated, and we don't realize that some 30 million Americans are still on well water, and it's a system that's off the grid. Nobody's monitoring it. Every case I'm involved in, 8 times, 9 times out of 10, is communities on their own well water.
That's right.
And these chemicals many times don't have a smell or a color. They don't know until they all get sick. And what, we need to look at that infrastructure.
What about bottled water? I mean, how do we know those things aren't contaminated too?
Well, you know, sometimes they are. And as we found out with all the plastics, that was a problem. And so, bottled water has some of its own problems. I mean, I'm involved in this film called Last Call to the Oasis that will be out in the spring. And, you know, they show from a clip in there where one of these big, massive, you know, stadiums decided to do nothing but sell bottled water, and they took out all the, you know, fountains. Well, it happened to be an unbelievably hot day, and they ran out of bottled water, and people had nowhere to go get water.
Ugh.
And they were blacking out, and ambulances had to come. And it's like, what is up with that?
Is this a true story, or is this part of this film?
Yeah, it's in the film, Last Call at the Oasis. And bottled water, it's convenient. I think that there are some issues with it. I think there's some that's good. I think that there's some that might not be. I think companies have done tests on the different bottled waters and sometimes found different contaminants. Reverse osmosis is usually a fairly good process, but you've got a double-edged sword with water. You know, you've got to do the chlorination on it, or otherwise you can have bacteria and viruses, which can be deadly in themselves.
Yeah.
And we have to be conscientious and careful how much we're chlorinating and using chloramines in our water system as well. So bottled water is an easy solution. I drink it. Generally, I somewhat feel safe with it, but I'd rather have an opportunity to turn on my tap and take a hot bath or a long shower and have the confidence that my water's safe and clean, and it's certainly not going to hurt me.
Aaron, if, If you had to categorize your efforts in the one specific area, what would you say it's to try to clean up the water?
Yes, absolutely.
Primarily? Okay.
Yes. You know, for me, yeah. There's been a lot of talk about global warming, and I definitely think that, you know, all of our pollution has sped up a process, but none of us. You know, I believe we come to the rescue of famine and lack of water in less fortunate countries such as Africa. And we're closer than I think people know to being that ourselves here in the United States. And we really do have an upcoming water crisis.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, if the Colorado River dries up, isn't the entire West Coast and Nevada and everything, aren't they all screwed?
Oh, yeah. California's definitely got water problems. And again, from agricultural misuse to, droughts, I mean, we're taking more than it can give. I mean, just imagine going to the bank and taking withdrawal, and never making a deposit. Eventually, it's depleted. You're done. And jeez. California is on the brink of it's definitely on the West Coast, a water crisis. It's coming. But here's the thing. See, we can change it. This is what drives me crazy. We really do have some good science and technology, and look at how far we've come with the internet and, you know, the networking of Facebook and Twitter and Google and Yahoo. Yet we can't deal with our upcoming water crisis. It's already upon us. And you mentioned hydrofracking, and I mean, this is a process where I understand that we need different forms of energy, but we have to be methodical and cautious and conscientious of how it is we go about that, because the process, and I am flooded with emails from people in Pennsylvania and Texas and Oklahoma and Minot, North Dakota, where they're really going at it right now. This process uses a chemical that gets recycled back into the aquifer. There's this entire water system underneath our feet that we never see, out of sight, out of mind, that's being jeopardized and degraded every single day with lots of chemicals, pharmaceutical chemicals, and benzene and trichloroethylene and perchlorate and hexavalent chromium. And I mean, it's like, are we crazy? We can't keep doing this.
And you're right, though. Out of sight, out of mind. If people don't know about it, they don't see it, it's not a problem as far as they're concerned. And
no.
It's there.
But until they turn on the tap and there's no water.
What has been for you probably one of the most heart-wrenching stories that you've come across with your work?
Oh, you know, every one of them can be. I have to tell you, the Leadwood, Missouri case has really bothered me because it's right there in front of my face. And it's a community, it's just forgotten. We've just forgotten them. And we've got these children that are exposed to lead, you know, what's their future going to look like?
I mean, they talk about lead paint, be careful, but they forget to tell you about the piles of lead that have been dumped in their community.
Absolutely. And here is a company, Doe Run, I'm not afraid to mention them. Really? You are a big company. You don't have a better way to deal with your lead waste piles. You don't even cover them. I mean, they're coming in people's front yards and having to replace them and dig down a foot just to remove all the lead contamination.
Oh, jeez.
And that this is happening today.
How far is that spreading out from the pile?
Yeah, it gets windblown a pretty good distance.
Yeah.
And it gets in people's windowsills. You know, it can get dry out there. It's dusty. The wind blows. It can be in the house. They don't even know it. And children outside playing in it, let alone they ride their bicycles down to those lead piles, and they think they're mountains. They're fun to play in.
Yeah, they're climbing up them and everything. Mm-hmm.
You know, Leadwood disturbs me. The case in Cameron, Missouri disturbs me, which is a hexavalent chromium contamination case. And somehow this waste they circumvented the authorities and mixed it with fertilizer and sold it to farmers, and then they spread it on their fields.
Oh, my God. Aaron, stay with us. We're going to take this quick break. We're going to come right back, talk about your consulting company and some of the work you're doing. And then in the last hour, of course, we'll take phone calls with Aaron Brockovich right here on Coast to Coast AM. We will take your phone calls next hour with Erin Brockovich as we talk about her work, Rock Bottom, Hot Water as well. Hot Water just came out. Rock Bottom came out in March. And we'll be back with a little bit more on Coast to Coast AM. Erin, how do you get the information that you follow up on? Does it come in from emails or private sources? How does it come to you?
It comes in mostly email. You know, this situation that's happening out in the Topok Golden Shores area, another hexa chromium contamination, Pacific Gas and Electric. I got an email from a woman who had just moved out there. Retired from her job, and right away she had some notice on her door that there was some kind of problem with the water. And then she was involved in, like, the women's, you know, Rotary Club, and they were talking about the chemical and PG&E and Chrome 6. And she sent me an email, and here's the twist on this one. She said, I also need to let you know that I was the secretary to one of the defense counsels for PG&E on the first Hinckley case. I'm like, oh, my God.
Small world.
Are you kidding me? What a small world. So more often than not, email. People sometimes send me letters as well. There could be a community member that knows someone that knows me that will call me, and then I'll get back in touch with them. But mostly the internet.
Tell me about this case in North Carolina at the military camp.
Oh, my gosh. Camp Lejeune. Oh, my gosh. I can't tell you how many emails I have. We're definitely doing some work on that. I know the senators from there are doing some work on that, but I don't know that enough is being done. Camp Lejeune is a situation where they had a very bad TCE contamination. And this is, it hits really hard home for me because I have two children serving in the United States Army, and I have one son who just returned home from Afghanistan in a very bad war. And he's one of few that made it back. And the idea at Camp Lejeune that these men and women who really volunteer and will sacrifice their life to ensure the safety, they believe this is what they're doing of their country and defending it, and they go out and they serve one and two and three tours of duty, and they come home and they get poisoned on their own soil, for me, is inexcusable. And that's exactly what's happening there. Generation after generation, this TCE contamination went on and contaminated the drinking water well of everybody that lives on that base. And I am dumbfounded at the SCAD and the numbers of people reporting to me. Please help us. I'm a young soldier returning from two deployments. I've lived here for 10 years, and I've now been diagnosed with this cancer. So families coming back and saying, now I know why I had these stillborns in the 70s and the 80s. No one told us. I mean, there's a report out there, and I have yet to put my hands on it, but I've heard it's there, from the agencies from Toxic Substances and Disease Registry. And there's an estimate that over 10,000 people stationed at this facility could come down with cancer. Are you kidding me?
That's crazy.
And so Camp Lejeune is something I'm going to get more involved in. I'm in talks with some news agencies, specials, to run a special on what's happening. And I do know that the government is somewhat involved in trying to help, but it's a process that's going way too slow. A lot of people aren't being identified. A lot of people are coming to me. There's very few attorneys involved because it's Department of Defense. They just don't want to touch it. And I just think it is a story that has to be told. And really, for our men and women, they leave their families, they feel safe at that base, to come home, they make it home, and their families have been poisoned, and young people with cancer and disease is despicable. I would not be proud to be from this country and tell you that's happening, but it is, and Camp Lejeune is very disturbing.
That's a huge story, Erin.
Yes, and it's one that we need to be looking at and paying attention to, and, you know, it's just... It's time for all the finger-pointing to stop, and we have got to do something to rally around these men and women and help them in any way that we can and make sure they have clean water, move the base, clean it up. And here again is the problem. This has gone on for years, and they didn't even know it. Somebody knew it.
What's going on in West Palm Beach, Florida?
West Palm Beach, Florida. Well, there's a lot of stuff going on in West Palm Beach, Florida. I was roasted recently down there for deodorant contamination in a community called DeLand. And there's six other communities reporting as well that it's pesticide. And, you know, here it is 20 years later. And there's a couple of ways that that can happen. It's manufactured and used as a pesticide. And it's also used in termite control. And it seeps into the groundwater and it pops up in people's wells unsuspectingly. And they drink it for years. There's another situation down in West Palm Beach called the Acreage, where community came to us, and it always starts grassroots mother. They were at a doctor's office with a child that had cancer, and then they realized that there was two and three other neighbors there. Now we have over 20 kids with these brain tumors. The numbers are higher than that, but I don't. Without looking specifically at it, I don't want to misquote any number. But the state came in. They said that there was a pediatric brain cluster. Then they kind of retracted from it. The law firm was involved. There was some kind of legal conflict. So I believe a local attorney has it now. They're close to Pratt Whitney, but we were never able to identify what the source is. But there's something wrong there. There's some issues with their two nuclear facilities down there. There was a study done not too long ago. It's actually called the Tooth Fairy Study, about babies in and around that facility, those two nuclear facilities down in that area, having a higher instance of radioactive material in their teeth, their baby teeth. I mean, so there's definitely some problems there, and you might have been referring to just the Acreage, but there is a large number of children there with brain tumors, and I've been down there several times investigating. I'm a little stumped on that one.
It's got to be frustrating.
It's very frustrating. And sometimes you can't prove it. Sometimes you can prove it. But, again, if we don't look at what it could be, and if we can't find what the source is to try to do something to help the health and welfare of this community, sometimes I just feel like I could pull my hair out. And I wish that I always had an Einstein moment or something comforting to say to people, and I don't always have that answer or solution. And I find myself frustrated, but then again, a lot of times what they're looking for, and they'll say to me, is, it's just nice that somebody even listened. It's just nice that we even went through this. And these are people who have lost a child or have a child with cancer, but still can say to you, thank you for at least listening. Thank you for coming out here, and thank you for getting the state to even look at it. And I don't know if agencies are overburdened and understaffed, and frankly, they're underfunded and they're flat out broke. But sometimes it isn't always about finding the answer for them. Sometimes it's just about extending your hand out of kindness and respect and appreciation for your neighbor.
Exactly.
We don't do that anymore.
When you talk about cancer clusters, explain that. Exactly what does that mean?
Well, I mean, the CDC and other agencies will have a different way of how they identify cancer clusters. What I'm doing is, again, it's a people's reporting registry. So the CDC could have, they never find a disease cluster because they have this census track where they think that this particular type of cancer would be seen in 220 people in the community. And if they don't see 220 people in the community, well, therefore, there's not a problem. But yet, they might not be finding everybody that has that same cancer, but they've moved to another location and is able to put them back to that place. Now, I've done some work with Senator Boxer and her environmental committee, and I actually spoke to this committee up on the Hill, and they are trying to pass what's called Trevor's Law. And Trevor's Law is a beautiful young man who is from Idaho who had a brain tumor. And he identified, I think there's about 10 or 12 other children that had the same brain tumor he did. And he's the only one that beat it. And he's going to make it his life's work for these agencies to find these children, because a lot of times they'll have some reports, but they don't have a way for the system to pull all of those same cancers into one location so that they could even possibly say, this is a cluster. And a cluster is just more people than expected with the same disease in a certain area.
After the movie came out in 2000, and, you know, it reached its peak of publicity for you personally, did you think this was it? You know, I did the power and gas thing, and it's over. Did you expect it to blossom the way it has?
No. You know, I feel like I stuck my finger in the dike and stop a flood, and 1,000 other floods have opened
up. They kept popping out.
Yeah, I had no idea. Really, I didn't. I just thought it was kind of, I don't know, a one-off thing. I mean, who knew? I mean, even, you know, I've always cared about the environment, but to suddenly be involved in a groundwater contamination with a chemical that's poisoned people and that deception that went behind it, I didn't see that one coming. And I have to tell you, Hinckley was a microcosm, and it is a representation of thousands of communities, not only in the U.S., but at a global level.
It's got to be shocking just to see what you see.
It is, and it is what I see. And see, for me, what I see is believing. And, you know, I've had time in Hinckley. I was just up in Hinckley again, the last place I ever expected to be, with a family who's been in this plume that broke through for probably 10 years. I stood there. I've seen it with my own eyes. Their dog is covered with like 400 tumors.
Oh.
I saw that when I was out in Hinckley the first time. Cows covered 500-600 tumors. Two-headed chickens, chickens with wryneck, animals just dropping dead. See, the environment is telling us something if we just stop and pay attention. And I'm out in Hinckley again. PG&E's out handing out bottled water, but they've done nothing wrong. PG&E's buying out people's homes, but they've done nothing wrong. Animals are covered in tumors. People at 36 years old who've never smoked in their life have lung cancer, but nothing went wrong. And so seeing is believing for me. And I just, again, I said it earlier in your show, you will never convince me that 1,700 communities and counting are reporting to me. See, they're reporting something, and we're not listening that there's these types of problems in and around the United States. And we have...
Why aren't these companies learning from their past mistakes?
Well, because I guess a lawsuit can get filed and they can tie it up and hang on to their money for another 8, 10, 12 years. And we're worried about this health crisis we have in this country. You know, for me, I just sit here and think, well, if we would look at all of these people's reports, go into those communities, if it's a source of contamination, clean it up. I bet you if we came back in 10 years from now, you'd see less disease. And see, everyone thinks that the EPA is going to come in and save them. Well, that's not going to happen, and it's not the EPA's job to follow the health fallout of these communities some 10 years later. We have, what, some 2,500 Superfund sites in the United States that haven't even been cleaned up yet? We could be putting people to work. We could be hiring construction crews and training them properly and disposing of that waste and putting science and technology to work on what it is we're going to do with that waste and water filtration companies and getting them on wellheads and cleaning our water. We could be creating jobs, but we don't.
We'd have a new industry
overnight. We could. But it's a real problem. And I'm planning to be around. If we could really, you'll never find a solution if you don't find the source, do you? And we just don't want to look at the source. The elephant's in the room, and we just keep walking around it. But if we could deal with it, we could make some change.
How critical is your MAP cluster to this whole program?
Well, I think it could become very important, and that is why I am so thankful that I'm in these discussions with Google's, because I have to be able to have this. You know, I look at this computer every night, and I feel like I could pull my hair out. What is the most responsible, effective thing that I could do with all this information?
Yeah.
And how could I put it together in a way where I could present it to an agency, a local agency, a state agency, the CDC, the National Institute of Health, so we could really look at this and at least give an explanation to people what it is that could be happening. Because it's all of it's not a coincidence. It's not a coinkydink. It's just not.
What does Google need to do to get this going for
you? We have to build the software, and we are getting much further along in our getting through to Google and getting through the steps of what you need to do the right way. Isn't a task that can happen fast enough.
No, it's like Fort Knox something.
But we are definitely making progress. And I'm also, I've got a staff, and I'm working with a firm that is really instrumental in having people answer the emails so we can categorize the information so we can look at what's water issues, what's air pollution, what's pharmaceutical, what's product liability. And we can begin, and we are starting to run some of our own statistics on how many people, when we run a query search on just glioblastomas, are reporting in the United States, and then breaking it out from there and being able to present the data to somebody. And sometimes it's very helpful to just be able to have that data to show at a community meeting. And as startling as it is for them, see, knowing the truth is very freeing. A lot of times you can't make a decision and you don't know what to do because you don't know what the truth is. But once you have some facts and you're armed with information, then you can begin to make decisions on how to better safeguard and protect the health and welfare of your family.
What's new for Erin Brockovich after all this is done?
Oh, that's a good, good question. Let's see. You know, I've had more fun doing the books and TV shows. My mainstay will continue to be, I think I'm going to be on a water plight and trying to create awareness and change how we're dealing with something that I believe has a direct link to public health and welfare. You know, it amazes me. You know, we were talking about Beverly Hills High earlier. The state of California legislates to remove vending machines from schools because Fritos
That's
are bad
right.
for our kids, but you will leave an onshore oil platform built on top of a school and try to convince me that that didn't hurt them.
You know, Erin, one, I want to thank you for the work that you've been doing for all these years for people. And, you know, even if it's saved one life, it's worth it.
Well, thank you. And I have always felt that way. And you know, I've shared in my lectures, I've had this reoccurring dream that has turned into a nightmare for me. And what started off in a canoe floating down the river of life, and you know what, it's pretty sweet, just watching the trees turn colors in the fall and feeling the warm sun on my face and just the silence of the air and the smell of fresh-cut grass. It's really kind of a sweet ride. And along the way, a hand came out of the water. And you know what? I extended a hand to help, and I put him in my canoe, and off we went. And we kept going down that river of life, and here came another hand, and another hand, and another hand. And then we hit rapids, and so many hands were coming out of the water at the canoe. I just had to almost sit there helplessly as people drown. And I'm feeling that that is really happening, and that dream is a representation of what I'm seeing going on out there. And there's more people in need of help, and we need to get more canoes in that water so we can pick them all up.
We should do. We're going to come back and take some final phone calls with you on our final hour with Erin Brockovich. Okay, those of you who have been calling since the first hour, now's your time. We'll be right back.